Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in Paper 71, Section 2, which is Old Single Column, page 801. All right. We went through the first section in the preface here in the preceding session. We got ourselves spun up with the idea of the state. You can see by the title of section one, it's the embryonic state. So they got us into statehood through the evolutionary process. Remember how they stressed that? But very much now, we are looking at, as we were pointing out, as you go, begin to move away from the embryonic state of the state. But embryonic stage of the state. How about that? More and more, definitively conscious, volitional activity is involved, not only to initiate those more advanced stages, but to maintain it. As you go forward, initiating and maintaining have to be more and more tightly coupled, until they literally walk instantly hand in hand. Less and less do you have a phenomenon where you initiate it and then there's this material inertia that'll carry it a ways, and then you can kind of recognize, oh, I need to be maintaining because there's friction and this material inertia is going to grind down and it won't keep going by itself and I have to maintain it. See, more and more it becomes something liberated from that material phenomenon, which is a positive thing, but also it's a challenge. You no longer have the grace of material inertia to carry things forward. You have to be actively in every moment seeing to its integrity, seeing to it being something that will be upheld and hence maintained. You can't count on just that that material physics to get it done for you. The physics of a more spiritized phenomenon, see, is all the more fluid and dynamic and dependent upon your spirit pattern, your personality, being very much in the moment with that spirit directionizing the mind of each individual, and that then manifesting outward as a societal expression that is an advancing civilization. Right? So they start us out with very much beginning to bring in this consciousness of ideals and how that feeds into all of the basic elements of this of a state. Read the little intro there first, and then we'll do the list.
Section 2, the evolution of representative government. Democracy, while an ideal, is a product of civilization, not of evolution. Go slowly. Select carefully. For the dangers of democracy are...
Okay, see, so before we get into the specific dangers, see how there's... I was priming you to recognize what they're bringing out there. See, it's not a product of evolution. Okay, so like I said, that product of evolution they were talking about, getting things going, we're moving away from that. It's a product of civilization, and civilization is a choice. See, so more and more, it's dependent upon wise, insightful, foresightful human choice. Okay, and The title is The Evolution of Representative Government. Okay, so we're fundamentally talking about a republic. Right? And a republic is an idea predicated on an ideal. Democracy. Pure democracy. You can't apply the ideal directly and expect it to work. Because it hasn't taken physical reality into account. It's just this ideal that you recognize with your spiritual consciousness. And it has to be downstepped to face the facts of material life as some idea. The essence of the ideal is in the idea, but the idea is not the ideal.
It's interesting they say it is ideal.
Right, right. It is the ideal. They're just trying to stress that. Because most spiritually conscious people on the planet think that democracy is an idea that you can, pure democracy is an idea that you can just apply. Anyone who knows the founding of the United States knows that the founding fathers knew we'd been there, done that. Athens tried that. Right? It doesn't work. You can't apply the ideal directly. But you're inspired by the ideal, right? It's that spiritual inspiration, inspiriting, right? That is motivating you. You have a spiritual motive that leads you to forming a wise idea predicated on that ideal. Okay, and so since it's so dependent upon this choice, it doesn't just naturally happen through evolution and we can all kind of be clueless and it'll just happen. Since it's so dependent on us, and when we're starting out, we're so not supremely wise, right? You get two exclamation points. Go slowly, select carefully. Right? Because you are, it's not going to be as it initially appears to you. You're going to think, oh, this is a great idea here, okay? But you're going to be ignorant of many things that will lead to problems. So knowing that when you implement your ideas in this regard, there's going to be difficulties that will crop up. You're going to have to back up a little bit. Oh, we need to improve that. We've reduced that initial assumption to a bit of an absurdity here through the experiential process. So we need to back up. If you're racing headlong towards your supposed destiny, right? You're going to fall on your face very hard, and you may so disrupt the situation that you lose the whole integrity that is slowly built up through the evolutionary process that this is all predicated on. Okay, so they're stressing that. Recognize that your mind is not innately divine, no matter how many times Caligastia and Lucifer and whatnot told us that. It's not. It's very, very minimally wise to begin with. Okay? And has not developed very deep insight yet. So just take it slowly and think in experimental terms. Well, let's try this. We're doing it slowly, so if it's an issue, we'll see it, and we can back up and try it again. That's the idea. Okay, if you don't take their advice there, of two exclamation points, and you just get all excited by this spiritual quickening in your mind, the word democracy, enters your mind, and you are just, beside yourself excited. Okay, you're going to go racing off, and it's going to lead to the following problems. And you notice there are dangers. You're going to be dominated by something that you don't want to be dominated by.
Before you get into that.
Yep.
So how long has not democracy been practiced on this planet? Not that long, right?
No. Probably. 2,500 years, 2,600 years.
That long?
Well, since the ancient Greeks. I mean, we're the first. I mean, the United States is sort of the first, significant implementation, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so when they say go slowly, or select carefully, mm-hmm. I'm a little confused as to what that really means in terms of go slowly, because is democracy and what they're saying, is that a process, so to speak, that it says it's not of evolution, but is it a process that you mentioned a minute ago, that evolves, even though it's not of evolution. But
right. It's just that you have all the reins now. You know, you aren't just sort of being...
It's better, so to speak.
You're in the driver's seat more. It's not like the previous stuff where you can be basically clueless. And, you know, we progress in spite of ourselves. You know, the whole, the glacier is just moving us along forward. And we finally find ourselves with an embryonic state. And we go, whoa, what is this thing? We should stop and reflect on this and figure out the laws of it. And
because there's several forms of democracy just in this world.
Yes, and they'll get to that about...
What it means by going slow.
Exactly how... Right, there isn't just one proper idea. Okay. Right, there's many proper ideas, and so you have all kinds of decisions to make about exactly how do we implement this. I mean, how do you set up, a system for raising revenue for the federal government? How do you set up a system to deal with the decrepitude of old age? How do you set out? There's all these details. How do we set up a legislature? Does it have, you know, one body, two bodies, three bodies? All these details. Okay. And there's going to be unexpected consequences to your decisions. Like, well, I think maybe this is a good idea. Let's try it. But be ready to back, you know, put on the brakes and back up if we notice that this isn't going like we had hoped. Instead of, well, we set it up, and now we've got to keep going with it. You know, we have this tendency to never back up.
The Constitution
says. Yeah. Okay. All right. So again, just before we read the, I was stressing their dangers. Remember, the revelators use that word in its literal form, not in the way we flippantly throw it around. It means that there is a potential for domination of your system by something that you've put above it that shouldn't be above it. An unfortunate master has been put into place, and it will corrupt everything underneath it. Okay, so what are these 5 points?
1, glorification of mediocrity. 2, choice of base and ignorant rulers. 3, failure to recognize the basic facts of social evolution. 4, danger of universal suffrage in the hands of uneducated and indolent majorities. 5, slavery to public opinion. The majority is not always right.
Okay. See, so...
We're 5 for 5.
Yeah, we're 5 for 5.
Right, so... If you didn't guess... By just all the preface I've been giving, I mean, everything we're going to study tonight is over-the-top relevant, okay? Everything we're going to read, you're going to sigh. Oh, dear. right, because we've gotten to the very, very relevant points of why there's a fifth epical revelation, right? They're about to explain to us what needs to be for this this most advanced evolutionary product relative to government to be enduring. There are very specific things that must be in place, or it will not endure. It will collapse, right? And we're talking about how tenuous representative government is. It's only been around for a very short time in any significant fashion. Don't assume that, oh, it'll just, you know, it's just all this inertia and it's going to just keep rolling, even if we're kind of ignorant and self-centered and materialistic and whatnot. No, it's not. It will collapse in a heartbeat. And, there isn't some greater society that will pick up the pieces, right? If the United States collapses, what will happen to democracy on this planet. Right? There's a lot of very powerful forces that are not interested in democracy and would love to take the stage. Right? Very authoritarian governmental systems. So this is, again, two exclamation points, right? This is what it's all about. Okay, so the first one, it all starts, see, now that we have a state, remember we have citizens, okay? And citizens have to have integrity. And so that's the foundation. And if the citizens don't have integrity, there can't be anything else. So if you start with limited citizens who, you know, we all have a tendency to want to think of ourselves in positive terms. Our first instinct is not, you know, I'm kind of mediocre genetically and kind of limited mentally. That's not our first instinct, right, to speak of ourselves that way. Right, there's a tendency, you know, I think I've got most of it there. Man, I think I've got it all there. Right? That's a glorification of mediocrity. Right? You are not a frog. You are a tadpole. And if the tadpole believes it's a frog, that's the glorification of mediocrity. And so if you start with that, this self-exaltation, right? If you lift the self beyond the fourth level of meaning, the level of self-respect, if you glorify that beyond that level, it goes up one notch to self-esteem, and it's beginning to get problematic. And if you take it up yet another notch to the sixth level of meaning, you have self-admiration, you have self-love. And you're right there with Lucifer and crew.
Where's aggrandizement?
Well, let's just see this whole false self-aggrandizement.
So the team has two sides.
We see, that's one of the problems. See, in our that the very fact that we use self-esteem as a positive word now is why this book is in my lap. Self-esteem is not a positive word, but we are so confused philosophically. And we've now preached this for decades now. Oh no, self-esteem, that's a movement. That's a positive thing. No, self-esteem is a negative word.
It's like being proud.
Yes, it's like being proud. Yes, and pride goeth before a fall. Right? You didn't have self-admiration, but you had self-esteem issues with the Apostle John, quote unquote, the apostle whom Jesus loved. Right. As the revelators point out, that's a little negative. That's a little blind spot in John, where he's, you know, aggrandizing himself a little bit inappropriately. So it all starts with this not knowing yourself.
That didn't mean that Jesus didn't love him.
Of course.
His was thinking that. I mean, he loved him more than others, is what you're saying.
Jesus loves all of us, no matter how, you know, foolish we are. God loves us absolutely, independent of any thought in our head. See, again, it has nothing to do with our relationship to God the Father. All these things we're talking about have nothing to do with our relationship with God the Father. You know, we aren't putting ourselves in some sort of spiritual jeopardy or anything like that. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with civilization. And it has to do with how we conduct ourselves in a collective phenomenon and whether or not it has the requisite integrity to hold together, or if it's going to just dissolve into a bunch of little selfish island universes that are innately antisocial. All right, so it all starts with this this self-exaltation, inappropriate self-exaltation. So if you start with that, if there's a glorification of mediocrity, okay, then everything is predicated on that assumption that there's glory where there isn't. And so you're going to choose base and ignorant rulers. I mean, if you don't recognize the limitations in you, the base and ignorant aspects of you, right? Again, you know, oh, I love this person. I don't know why. Oh, because they remind me of me. Right? Again, what are our instincts? You see, why are there two exclamation points? They're reminding you of your animal instincts and how poorly they can serve you here. If you just let them run, right? You're going to project this outward into the way you vote.
They call it his base.
Well,
appeals to his base. I'm just teasing.
Well, I mean, think about that. I mean, the different ways we use the word base. You need a base. You need a foundation. You know, nothing can be built upon nothing. And yet that base can be base. See, there are different ways, right? That's the whole thing. It's not that you shouldn't have a base. It's just that if you lower that base down below an objective human quality level and build everything on that foundation, you know, it's not going to stand. Okay? And notice that it's ignorant rulers. They may be very, very brilliant individuals, but they're ignorant, right? They're intelligent, but not wise. Right? It's not how brilliant you are, it's how ignorant you aren't. And it's very important to notice when they, you know, that they used ignorant there purposely.
They can also be very well-intentioned.
Yeah. Right. So-called well-intentioned, yes.
In Arkansas, they call themselves ignorant.
Yeah. Yeah. And technically, you know, what we basically mean when we say well-intentioned, we aren't actually, you know, carefully examining the nature of those mindful intentions. What we mean is they had a positive desire, and then they proceeded to blindly will it and ignorantly express it. Right? They lacked the insight and the wisdom to get it from a positive desire to something implemented that actually produces what they envisioned up front. Right? It's not enough to just be able to envision. Right? You have to have insight and wisdom in order to get the result you're looking for. Then number three, see, failure to recognize the basic facts of social evolution. Like, change without growth is potential evil. Okay? That's the most immediate thing that's being implied by that, by item number three. The double exclamation points. Right? But go slowly, select carefully. Change without growth is potential evil. Right? You are, even though you're actively involved now, like you weren't in the beginning stages, with your will, with your volition, you still have to humbly act relative to the Supreme, relative to the whole. There is a system that's in place. It has all of the value of that long evolutionary process embedded in it. You have to recognize that value. You have to respect that value. You have to very wisely foster that value forward to higher expressions. Okay. You have to understand that society is an evolutionary phenomenon, that everything is an evolutionary phenomenon. And when you fail to recognize that everything's an evolutionary phenomenon, your spiritual consciousness, in its impatience, wants to act right now with the first thing that you think is brilliant that pops into your head, okay, without reservation. And you'll implement change that isn't synchronized with the growth of the evolutionary system, and you will get not goodness like you envisioned. You will get the exact opposite.
True.
Right? You know, and if you do this very well, instead of getting light and life like Lucifer envisioned, I mean, remember, Lucifer wasn't envisioning black ooze, right? He was envisioning the age of light and life, right? The era of light and life. And he implemented definitively his vision, right? And he got the orgy of darkness and death. Right?
He forgot that
he's a tadpole in a very vast, complicated system filled with all sorts of inscrutable, humbling facts. Okay, so failure to recognize the basic facts of social evolution. Instead, we want to do everything by fiat. And then you're bringing it a little bit more to the point, you know, the danger of universal suffrage in the hands of uneducated and indolent majorities. Emphasizing this majority issue, see, in these last two items. I mean, the basic way you're setting up a democracy is majorities rule. It's like, well, yeah, but we're not innately divine, so this could be a problem. We're going to have to set up a system that takes that into account, and there's a buffer between our ignorance and what we implement. There has to be some checks and balances on all this. You know, you can see they're pointing out, and they'll get to this in a minute. I mean, you can't have a democracy if you don't have significant education of everyone, certainly that's voting. Right? You know, if they're poorly educated, if they have all sorts of false notions about democracies, if they haven't been properly taught about the nature of democracies, and you know, you give them political capital, right, it's going to be a problem. You know, not to mention, remember, we all start out, we're naturally animal origin indolent, we're pain avoiding. We don't like the Eightfold Path to Progress, because it goes through conflict, effort, struggle, conflict, right? And the pain of conflict, pain and suffering are essential to progressive evolution. We envision progress, but we think we can somehow have progress without having to go through the conflict stuff. Right? No, there is no way. You have to have courage, courageous and independent cosmic thinking. The courage to face these conflicts of when reality blows back on you, and it does, you know, you your implementation didn't meet your expectations, your wonderful envisionings. Yeah. okay, so there's that, and then right, and obviously I don't have to stress how these things are all in play, and just think about how horrendous it is, you know, this slavery to public opinion. The majority is not always right. That's the whole point of going to a representative government. Right? You're trying to distill the will of the people into a better subset that has the requisite insight and wisdom, instead of just trying to do it the Athens way, where all men are born equal, right? Everyone is put on an equal plane, and it's just going to be a pure majority rule. Well, that's all fine and dandy if you're some magical, enlightened people. But we're not. We're us, with very limited biologic uplift, no philosophic uplift or magisterial son. We killed the bestowal son. There was a rebellion too. All right.
Anything else?
Yeah. So You know, and remember, we've talked about the three branches of government. Think about where this is most problematic. When you have a single individual, right? And it's one thing when you're talking about the legislature or the group of judges. But when you've got a single individual, you have that single individual because he needs to be this check in certain situations. And if that president only acts based upon opinion polls, right, he's totally short-circuited the whole point of the office. Right? Slavery to public opinion. The majority is not always right.
Ours is not doing that.
Okay.
It reminds me of the Will Rogers thing. Good decisions come from experience. And a lot of that comes from bad decisions.
Right. Again, right. He thought a lot of that. See, what do the revelators say? I mean, humans have always thought that a lot of wisdom results from tribulation. The revelators say, well, you're close. Actually, the only way to get wisdom is through tribulation.
Will Rogers had
Yeah. I know.
Quite but see,
you know, Will is just, Will is repeating the same thing that the revelators almost repeated, but didn't quite. They tweaked it. It's like, no, not one way to get wisdom. It's the only way. See, again, that courage thing, right? Effort, struggle, conflict. Right? There's going to be tribulation. You have to face that fact. There's no way around it. Okay. Anyway. We'll get into some of the details here. You know, if you flip forward, you see there's a great big long list that we're going to be going through. So we'll repeat some of these basic things. But see, they're giving you up front. They're giving you that they're validating the existence of the ideal of democracy, and then they're trying to remind you with a few simple bullet points. There are five bullet points of. It's only that very best core of you that was able to recognize that ideal, and the rest of you is not quite that integrous. And don't forget that. You have to be very pragmatic about the rest of you, and its tendencies as a ignorant animal origin creature. Okay, let's get a little bit more. So they get a little bit more on this public opinion issue.
Public opinion, common opinion, has always delayed society. Nevertheless, it is valuable, for while retarding social evolution, it does preserve civilization. Education of public opinion is the only safe and true method of accelerating civilization. Force is only a temporary expedient, and cultural growth will increasingly accelerate as bullets give way to ballots. Public opinion, the mores, is the basic and elemental energy in social evolution and state development. But to be of state value, it must be nonviolent in expression.
Okay, so notice how they've kind of come all the way around by the end of the paragraph there. Okay, you can't just throw out mores system. And the more system, as they're saying, there is the basic and elemental energy in social evolution and state development. Okay, so there has to be a more system. You also see we're obviously talking about moving from nation, mere nation, to territorial state, because we're leaving war behind, right? To be of state value, it must be nonviolent in expression. So everything sees continuing to be correlated as we've understood where we are in the developmental spectrum here. A similar issue. We've been talking about progress and this desire for progress. Remember the basic tension between the two groups of Master Seraphim. The progress angels and the religious guardians, where the religious guardians are the checkmates for the progress angels. Not unlike what we're talking about here. They need to make sure that the fruits of the evolutionary process are conserved and not lost in the midst of a desire for headlong progress. Right? So they're there to pull back on the reins, if not put the brakes on totally, the progress angels, not just checks, but checkmates. And see, we have this spiritualization of our mind, which gives us an affinity to the progress angels. But we need to go up another notch from just not being merely spiritual, but religious, having a genuine religious consciousness to put a governor on that spiritual animation and its endless fascination with the word progress. And thinking that progress is somehow just innately valid or whatever. Change without growth is potential evil. You can do what is, in a very objective sense, a proper thing to do. But if you do it too quickly or too soon, it will be a horrendous thing to do.
My hour has not yet come.
Right? Yeah, that basic truth of my hour has not yet come. Right? There's other spots in the book where they talk about that, that issue of you have to know the timing of all this and your spiritual consciousness, just the test's time. It wants to think existentially. It wants to do things in absolute fiat steps. Okay, so what's the remedy, they're saying? It's you have to be patient. You have to make sure that you don't lose all the hard-fought gains coming up from the past. Education of public opinion is the only safe and true, see? The only way to get it to synchronize with the whole so that it will be upheld.
How do you do that if you only have 160 characters? I'm just saying, well, education of the public opinion.
I mean, one of the things you can do with a few characters is, how many characters are in education of public opinion is the only safe and true method? Okay. You can remind people of the basic facts that are easy to forget, right? Every once in a while, you have to have that father-like injection into your excitement. That little reminder of, don't forget about this key element. And so...
There's already, though, a big movement, whatever you want to call it, that their ears and their eyes are completely closed to any education of any...
Right, I want to delay talking about education because we're going to get to that as we get into this list. There's just sort of foreshadowing this list here. But see, education is going to be a big thing that we have to recognize, as they're stressing there, when they use a word like only. In that whole bit of using executive fiat force is only a temporary expedient. Right? It's not going to be enduring. We basically, have made a lot of progress since the founding of this nation in moving from bullets to ballots. But again, of course, if things are degrading, it'll start to feel like bullets are getting closer and closer again, and no one really cares about ballots anymore. Right?
Yeah, right.
See, and again, it's like, think about why. Because ballots are so slow. My spiritual consciousness hates the slowness of the idea of elections and stuff. A bullet is so quick, and then I realize my spiritual ideals in an instant. Right? I just kill the thing that offends me. And now everything's perfect, like me. Right? See, there's going to be even... If you thought that in the past there was a high tendency for bullets because of, just an animal aggressiveness in us, wait till you pour gasoline on that animal. Wait till you spiritually juice him up a whole bunch. And then you get him intrigued with bullets again. Okay? It'll be even worse than it was before. Right? It's the point they're trying to make. All right. All right, what else do they say here before they get to this list?
The measure of the advance of society is directly determined by the degree to which public opinion can control personal behavior and state regulation through nonviolent expression. The really civilized government had arrived when public opinion was clothed with the powers of personal franchise. Popular elections may not always decide things rightly, but they represent the right way even to do a wrong thing. Evolution does not at once produce superlative perfection, but rather comparative and advancing practical adjustment.
See, who are they talking to here? Are they talking to the person who's biased to their material pragmatism? Or are they talking to the person who's biased to their spiritual idealism? You know, doesn't have the requisite balance. Right? I mean, someone who's hyper-idealistic, are they going to go for this statement? Right? But they represent the right way even to do a wrong thing. Will you convince someone of that? No, it's wrong. Just an absolutely wrong is what they'll say in their absolutized worldview. Right? They aren't taking evolution into account. You have to think in evolutionary terms. Right? You're not going to produce superlative perfection, even though you can visualize it perhaps, or so it appears. You're not going to produce that in one little brilliant step, right? You got to be patient, comparative, and advancing practical adjustment, right? So you have to give some credence to that material pragmatism side of the equation with your spiritual idealism. That gives you the ideal, right? That's the motivation. But your material pragmatism allows you to translate the ideal into an idea. And the two together, see, functioning together, give you a cosmic consciousness. So that what you produce has this natural wholeness to it. Safe and true method. Right? Conforms to the cosmos. It'll be upheld.
Sixth and seventh adjunct, right? We kind of come across here.
Yeah, I mean the beginning is to, you know, is to move up to the seventh adjutant, to respond to the philosophic impulse, not merely the religious impulse.
Right. Seems like you've been saying time and time again that the religious impulse is somewhat rampant in this world today, or it gets picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you said a long time ago. But the quivering on the brink could be the seventh adjutant, so to speak.
Right, right.
Which is then going to be able to temper that with, you know, brains.
Put it in a context, yeah. I mean, see, just the very simple energy, the energy of symmetry of the seventh adjutant, you know, not as a spirit of wisdom, but just as the energy of symmetry, it brings in that balance and proportion. Where you go, you know, there isn't just my spiritual consciousness. There's also my material consciousness. Okay, and I have to put them next to each other, and I have to weigh them against each other. Now, the limitation of the seventh adjutant just unto itself is, it gets you to that point, it's like, well, okay, on this hand I have this, and on this hand I have this, six of one, half a dozen of another. It can't resolve, you know, the situation, but it at least gets you putting the two side by side and considering the balance and the proportion between them. As you go up with your insights, that allows you to go, oh, what I need to do is this. It breaks that impasse of six of one, half a dozen of another. It allows you to discriminate and definitively know what's the proper thing to do. But, you know, again, that's there's no potential for that insight to function if you don't first have this balance and proportion instinct in your mind, as opposed to this blind single-mindedness that you have just with the sixth adjutant, where it appears that all you need is just more gasoline. All right, more zeal, and we'll get there. You know, and certainly those people that are advising patients are on the bad side of a dichotomy, of which I'm on the good side of, and they need to be rejected. And if they get too uppity, we'll have to kill them. So, because they're delaying society, right, as they said up there. See, right? So that tension, see, that's what they're trying to get at. That's where what those two exclamation points. I stress this all the time. You know, if we had a balance between our spiritual and our material consciousness, the book would not be in our lap. Right? It's that imbalance. Because we got the spiritual energization, so there can be kind of two things happening, but we didn't have the magisterial sun right there to work on getting us wise enough and holistic enough to have the proper cosmic balance to deal with this. And so we're just running blind with this spiritual awakening. You know, it comes from two things. What Michael did 2,000 years ago, and what the evolution, the God of evolution, what the mother has done in the last few centuries. Right? Between the two of them, we have all of this spiritual consciousness now that we never had before. You know, we have so much more spiritual consciousness now than we did 2,000 years ago, for instance. But we don't, all we have is a vague notion coming from Kaligastya that our mind is innately divine and you can just step on the gas. Now that you have this insatiable desire with this spiritual consciousness to step on the gas. You know, it used to be humans could build the same kind of huts for 400,000 years and be totally content. Are we content like that anymore? No, not even close, right? We have all of this, you know, energy now that we've got to change, we've got to do, right? We don't have the wisdom. And we just have an unfortunate teaching, residual teaching, that you don't need wisdom.
Yeah. Huts don't last very long.
Okay. All right, and we certainly don't want to be told that this indispensable wisdom thing that we need is only acquirable as a result of tribulation, right? As indolent animals, that's not some, you know, you go looking for a different preacher, you know, if your preacher's telling you that. Okay, let's see. Did we get everything there? Let's see. We got the personal franchise. Yeah, we saw that they're going to definitely be talking about that. You know, we saw the universal suffrage there in our previous list. Yeah, I think we're ready. So let's step through these. Yeah, we want to spend a little time on each of these, as it's like I said, it's extremely relevant. So let's see what they say here.
There are 10 steps or stages to the evolution of a practical and efficient form of representative government, and these are 1. Freedom of the person. Slavery, serfdom, and all forms of human bondage must disappear.
Okay. So notice what kind of a list this is. This is definitively a sequential list. We're building it. There are 10 steps. Okay. So this is step 1 we're reading. So you're not going to have any hope for practical and efficient representative government if there's issues with step 1. So everything else is predicated on that. So this is where, you know, I've tried to remind us, see, that, you know, even here in step 1, it's like, oh, slavery, we outlawed slavery, we don't have that. No. What does it say there? All forms of human bondage must disappear. Yeah, we don't have literal chains, you know, leg shackles, right, slavery, that much anymore. But notice they threw in serfdom.
Yeah.
So that you should be immediately thinking, what about that taxation slavery? Right, or all these other things, right? All forms. So So just right there, just, you know, you don't even have to go to the other nine. If you can look around and you can say, ooh, there are some things that are getting a little bit dicey there, just with step one. Right. So you know that the book is here for a reason. You know, at the beginning of the 20th century, as they were giving this book, we were, you know, in many ways leaving that old shackles slavery behind, but replacing it with subtler forms that we actually voted in. We thought, wow, I want that. I want to be a serf. Right? Glorification of mediocrity, or a danger of universal suffrage in the hands. Right? Well, you actually, it appears to you that this serfdom is good, and you vote it in. You change your constitution. Right? You say, well, what do those people who wrote the Constitution know? I mean, we're so much more intelligent now. I mean, it's obvious that serfdom is a great thing. What were they meaning? We shouldn't allow there to be serfs, you know, because of the Constitution.
Just a little bit.
we'll allow just a little bit of serfdom. Yeah, that was the problem in the Middle Ages. They had too much serfdom. They needed to be more measured about it. Yeah.
About 5 months out of 12, I'll
Yes. Okay. So, but you know, on the positive side, it isn't totally horrendous there. I mean, we still have a lot of freedom, right? We aren't totally lost. So there's something to stand on there to give us some hope. Okay. What about number two?
Two, freedom of the mind. Unless a free people are educated, taught to think intelligently and plan wisely, freedom usually does more harm than good.
Ding, 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 right there. Right. Now it is all over, see. Right, see that? Right. Now you see, I mean, we can't pass the number two test even. Right. That's what's really eroded. We just do not have a well-educated citizenry anymore. They believe all sorts of foolish notions. And the professors in our colleges believe these notions and teach these with great fervor, right? That, like, for instance, private property isn't a fundamental foundation of advancing government. No, we should get rid of that private property thing, right? Right, I mean, what have we seen? You know, that you've got nothing if you don't have private property. But now our most brilliant minds supposedly are teaching that's not the case. Yep.
I saw a billboard today. I'm quite certain it was for a university. And it showed the main things that why you should go to that university. The very first one was activism.
Activism, yeah. Right. We have a very large tank of gasoline to pour on your spiritual fire. Right? I mean, that's how they're advertising themselves now. See, so I'm saying we've very much slipped into this. Instead of being the place that fundamentally challenges you in this belief that you've already got everything innately that you need, it's like no. You are far short of having everything that you need innately. You need to be extensively broadened and deepened. Right? You come in here with a skull full of mush. Instead of that, it's just all this affirmation techniques for improving your zeal output.
Oh yeah, going to the march.
Right. You know,
we're going to the march tomorrow.
That freedom, see, and notice how it's termed, freedom of the mind. I'm a free thinker. No, not. true freedom of the mind, liberty and law, the recognition that you're at a higher level than that you're a citizen of this state, you're a citizen of the cosmos, a domain of law, and you don't get to vote on those laws, at least not for a long time, right? So think intelligently and plan wisely. You notice they throw in the plan what you mean. How many people have wisdom, see? And you notice it's not plan wisely and think intelligently. It's think intelligently and plan wisely. It's like the quest for knowledge and wisdom, and not the quest for wisdom and knowledge, right? Which is the foundational element, the philosophic quality of mind, right? The wisdom. Right, and I mean, not only does the populace in general can't plan wisely, but as we pointed, as they pointed out, now all that is flown over into Congress. Now, and not only can't they plan wisely, they can't plan at all. Right? They hardly even function with foresight as a human. Right? They function in the moment like an animal. Right? And just reacting to the moment.
Are we getting ready to shut down the government tomorrow?
Yeah, isn't this kind of slightly relevant, perhaps?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Slightly relevant.
Right.
Right, just it's see, and this is, this is where it's fundamentally breaking down. It's the failure of education, and it started at our highest levels and trickled down to to kindergarten. So it's just the whole vertical structure now is corrupted. And that's a very difficult thing to correct. That built, those first proper teachers were the product of a long evolutionary process that finally produced a few who could be the first teachers and teach the first students well. Right? If salt loses its savor, wherewith will be salted. Right? I mean, if now you're many generations down the road of false teaching, I mean, where do the proper professors come from? Right?
It's impossible.
It's very problematic.
They'd known this a year ago. I don't even know if I want to say this name, but they said, by the next generation of education, we will be able to complete the progress that so-called progress. They knew where right were to go.
Right.
Corrupted the entire educational system.
Like I pointed out.
Intentionally.
Yeah, right. Like I pointed out, I mean, most people are ignorant, but there's always been a handful that know these rules that we're reading and wanted to break it down, right? And they know what fundamental things you have to corrupt, right? You got to get them to forget about the truths of the past, and you've got to corrupt the educational system, and you've got to set up a militant rejection of religion, et cetera.
And the tax reform.
All those key things.
They had in there written reimbursement for homeschool, and they, in the Senate, they made them take it out.
But just remember, our initial job is not to get down into those details. We can all recognize there's a lot of specific examples. But remember that the main thing that if we're going to be disciples of the fifth epical revelation, we need to be encouraging this establishment of this framework above all those details. That reestablishment of a relationship to the truth of the whole. And then once that can get reestablished, then we can talk about specific details. It's very difficult, though, because you can immediately think of, well, here's a specific example, but it But it tends to focus you and everyone else, you know, down onto a single fact point. We can't fix this problem in a micromanagement mode. We have to reestablish the objective frame where all those details naturally are integrous. Right? Rather than trying to, let's fix this detail, this detail, this detail. You know, you can't do it part-wise like that. Right? The parts have problems. Each part has a problem because there's no whole that those parts enter in anymore. We need to reestablish the relationship to the whole, and the parts will follow.
And that maybe is what the philosophical, premise, so to speak. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
The reestablishment.
Yes. I mean, we need to encourage the rediscovery of that, the integrity that we found in ages past, that the parts exist in. You know, for a long time, before the 6th century B.C., everyone basically assumed that all the parts that we observe are each micromanaged by some spirit and hence have no coordination, there's no system, there's no whole. It's just a bunch of randomly manipulated parts. But we finally purged ourselves of that foolish thought and recognized, no, there's a whole. And the parts just don't coincidentally happen to work together. They work together, especially eventually, by design. And as long as you see to it that you're doing things in the context of respecting that whole, the parts will follow suit well. But if you lose sight of that, no matter how frantic you get, no matter how zealous you get in trying to micromanage the parts, it'll all fall apart. Okay? There is no way to do it in father-like fashion of, having an infinite number of fingers to micromanage an infinite number of parts.
In a way, is it changing the consciousness?
Yeah. It's
or evolving the consciousness.
And the basics, doesn't have to be evolved. It just has to be rediscovered, right? We need to go back to the beginning of the 20th century and rediscover the truths that had 2,500 years of evolutionary philosophy had produced. We need to go back and rediscover those truths. Stop being so self-aggrandizing about our current consciousness. I mean, humble ourselves and go back and recognize that we've gotten off on some foolish tangents. And we know they're foolish. We figured out they're foolish a long, long time ago, centuries ago. We figured out they're foolish. Often through very difficult, hard, experiential effort. And now we think they're wonderful because we've forgotten what we learned. We've forgotten evolutionary philosophy. Okay. And here we're talking about the basic truths of representative government. Okay. All right. So just to stress before we go to number three, it's because you've gone to the state and you have such a dependence now on this individual citizens. See, now you have these citizens. When you didn't have that, you could have mostly uneducated masses, right? And just a strong central king figure and could hold everything together. But the moment that you go to a state and have citizens, then this education issue is key. I mean, our founding fathers knew that. They knew if we didn't have a very effective educational system, this would all fall apart in very short order. Yeah. You just can't have illiterate, ignorant, peasants, and have this greater freedom that the United States is seeking to establish. Okay.
Number three, the reign of law. Liberty can be enjoyed only when the will and whims of human rulers are replaced by legislative enactments in accordance with accepted fundamental law.
We touched on that one just recently, how, again, it's that what I was just talking about. You know, we, again, mainly fueled by, not by the desire to literally go back to Kings, but the desire to satiate our spiritual consciousness for its, you know, having, as they said it, their superlative perfection now, right? This incredible fiat act that a legislative body and all that rigmarole, right, just doesn't do it. It's like, oh, if we could just replace the king, replace the president with a, not with a king, but with this benign dictator, with a high priest of our ideology, and he could just fiat institute, all of the tenets of our ideology, ta-da, light and life tomorrow. Yeah. Right. That will, and we were going back to the will and whims, desiring the will and whims in a way that we didn't used to. It's not just for the efficiency of that central figure, like the reason you got kings in the first place. Remember how they talked about that? Now it's this desire of just how sweeping they can enact, they can impose the doctrines of an ideology upon a people. And again, because we aren't properly educating our people to then get elected as representatives, most people in Congress don't even really understand what a legislature is anymore. Right? There's a strong tendency. It's like, well, shouldn't the president just impose his will and whims, and then when we all follow? It's like, no, you're the legislature. You're supposed to enact laws. And then the president enforces those laws. We're just very confused about this now.
Yeah. Nobody wants to be in the legislature who's got anything going.
Yeah. Just look how ineffective they are. I mean, they're so ineffective in many reasons, ways, just because they don't understand why they're there anymore. We've slipped into this. We're always looking to the president. It's like, no, it's your job, guys. Right? You're the legislature. You are the representatives of the people. The president's not the direct representative of the people. The president is the chief executive, the enforcer of the laws, and the commander-in-chief. The members of Congress are the representatives of the people. See, do we think that way? No. See, there's this tendency. It's like, no, the president represents us. No, he doesn't. The legislature represents you. See, and that's why I said, the fact that we start to think that the president is supposed to be the representation of it, that's why we want the president to be the high priest of our ideology now. It's so confused. The president is not your representative. The legislators are your, the representatives and senators are your representatives. That's why they call them representatives. Especially the House of Representatives are your representatives, not the president. But see if you see that basic philosophic element understood by the citizens of this country. Do you hear the media?
Most of them don't even know who their representative is.
I mean, most people don't even know who the president is, let alone who their representative is. Right? Most people, you show them the president and a giraffe, and they can't tell them. Man, you know how these new man on the street things go. They're just horrendous, right? When was the United States formed? Wasn't it like 1965? Right? I mean, that's the answers you get. Right
before the internet.
Unless a free people are educated, taught to think intelligently and plan wisely, remember we didn't stress that, freedom usually does more harm than good. See, we're definitely in that mode. Our freedom is more harmful than good now. You hear me joke, what we need is more indentured servitude. And it's because of number two, what they're telling you in item number two. Most people have way too much freedom for their empty cranium. they should not have any franchise with that hollow thing on their shoulders. So that's the problem. Okay, anyway. All right, so we see how, you know, some of these are really key, and we see how we're slipping, you know, in number one and number three. Okay, what's four?
Four, freedom of speech. Representative government is unthinkable without freedom of all forms of expression for human aspirations and opinions.
Here's one you've seen eroding and eroding over the decades here, recent decades. The sweeping aspect of that, of freedom of speech. You notice how they're wording it. It's okay. It's, first of all, it's unthinkable. See, without freedom of all forms of expression, not just of opinion, but all forms of expression for even human aspirations. And so, you know, you've for a lot of years you've seen a lot of things attempting to whittle it down to just, you know. Okay, we'll give you freedom to express your opinion. But, you know, we're going to outlaw you being able to express yourself that way. And, you know, and the Supreme Court has attempted to push back on that some. It's like, no, that's part of freedom of speech. You know, we see a lot of tension, you know, with those things. But, of course, in the last few years, it's totally slipping. You know, now you have lots of people that say, no, you shouldn't have any freedom of any kind of expression, even of your opinion. If your opinion is not the accepted opinion, it shouldn't be allowed to have any voice.
Politically incorrect.
Right? Like I said, I mean, and that's because, again, this, as soon as you let this spiritual energy go unchecked, it doesn't just stop with starting to take away private property, like with socialism, right? It keeps going until it gets to fascism, right? And it wants just one ideology, and all other ideologies are outlawed, right? It goes to that fascist step, all right? So, we definitely have problems there. What's next?
Five. Security of property. No government can long endure if it fails to provide for the right to enjoy personal property in some form. Man craves the right to use, control, bestow, sell, lease, and bequeath his personal property.
Right. So you notice why they gave you that second sentence? So you're reminded of the tension, why this is under assault. All right. If your idealism is running unchecked, you know, man craves the right to use, control, bestow. So primitive and so materialistic. Right. Let's push back on that. Right. Now let's start with production and distribution. Let's start with socialism. Put that in the hands of the state. Now that I think about it, you know, let's go all the way to communism. Right. And just completely eliminate private property. And see that, again, it's fueled by that unbalanced idealistic energy, right? That thinks, genuinely reflects on something like use, control, bestow, sell, lease, and bequeath, is personal property, mine. It's also greedy and selfish and materialistic, right? And just throws the baby out with the bathwater. Again, no government can long endure. So, you know, we have the material pragmatism, see, has to temper that spiritual idealism. I mean, animal origin nature, you're never going to, in this life, perforce you serve two masters. That one master is part raccoon. You can't change that. No amount of idealistic imagining will change that. You want to collect things and create your little pile of the shiny objects, right? And you want to pass those on, you know, because you are human, you want to pass them on to your kids, and they're going to pass them on to their kids. And you know, we've read about that. It all seems kind of silly in a very idealistic mode, but it's part of the evolutionary process, right? If you don't have that, there's no way to get something going. Everything evaporates every generation. And you're back to square one. So very important. And how the government, should be there to not just, not only does it allow for private property, but see security of property. It's got to see to it that every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the blink of an eye can't just walk away with all your private property.
Because your representatives made a law so that can't happen.
Yeah. Okay, number six.
Six, the right of petition. Representative government assumes the right of citizens to be heard. The privilege of petition is inherent in free citizenship.
Okay, so, we all appreciate that, and we see that in many ways that's still quite well in effect. Notice it's number six in a building list, right? Six is predicated on 1 through 5. Right? If 2 is totally broken down, what's this petition thing like? Those ignorant masses with the right to petition? Like they said, their freedom usually does more harm than good. Right? So, as you take that ignorance up this ladder that we're climbing up, right, it starts to have these sweeping consequences. Seven is built on six here, so we'll talk a little bit more about six, but let's get seven first.
Seven, the right to rule. It is not enough to be heard. The power of petition must progress to the actual management of the government.
Okay, so see what they're getting at. I mean, have you thought about the right to petition in that context? That it's basically a civic training ground for you to eventually get to the point where you can step into a position of leadership. You're learning the ropes in that domain of petition. And like I said, it's not enough just to be heard, but it has to be a process that then moves to you actually having the potential to take a position of power. Here you can probably recognize we've got a very corrosive thing that's been developing over a lot of years, where more and more we have an elite class that see that they're the only ones that have the right to any positions of power. All positions of power have to come out of that elite class. It can't come from someone who's just some citizen who started in a kind of a petitioning mode and engaging and then thinks he has the right to then step into a position of power. See? All right, we're very much losing that. And we've got some tensions fighting back against that. Right? The elitism has gotten, way over the top, and enough where a number of people recognize it as a problem. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that are ever more zealous champions of elitism. Party lines shift and stuff as these tensions between a government of the people as in contrast to a government by the elites. Right, those are worldwide tensions. Right, the elites have tried to take over in just about every country in the world that has any democratic nature. Like they're pointing out here, that's a very corrosive influence, right? That's not what democracy is about. Is a rule by some bunch of elites, right? You need, especially these ivory tower elites that haven't been in the trenches and gotten the requisite experience, that produces, you know, with lots of tribulation that leads to wisdom, so that when they get a position in power, they have wisdom. You know, instead, they just have theories, ideological theories, right? But they went to a very elite school, right? And so they have a right to any position they want in our government, so they think. And so, if you just open it up to everyone, I mean, who knows what you might get? Aren't you going to get exaltation of mediocrity? I was like, no, not if you have a well-educated citizenry. See, again, it's all predicated on that, like they try to point out. But the point is that it's, everyone should be able to move up, you know, and get a position in Congress or the court system or president or whatever.
Pretty obvious these are ordered if you try to pull anyone out.
Yeah.
They aren't going to work without the farmers.
Yeah. Right, like I said, it's 10 steps or stages. Okay, so there's that. You can see how that's kind of a resonant pair there. What about number eight?
Eight, universal suffrage. Representative government presupposes an intelligent, efficient, and universal electorate. The character of such a government will ever be determined by the character and caliber of those who compose it. As civilization progresses, suffrage, while remaining universal for both sexes, will be effectively modified, regrouped, and otherwise differentiated.
Yeah, and they also, you know, in the next paper on the neighboring planet, we'll talk about that. What's the basic element here again? Right. I mean, you've got this, you know, you've got your franchise. Again, it's all obviously very predicated on number two with the education, being well educated. And you notice they throw character and caliber, you know, just kind of sort of quality, quantity. So it has to be both. But then they remind you, they throw in that final sentence. Because again, you know, what's fueling the universal adjective on universal suffrage? Again, it's that spiritual energy in our minds. And, equality is a spirit word, right? So there should be equality of suffrage. And they're saying, yeah, that's appropriate. I mean, go ahead and kind of just directly implement the ideal. But eventually you need to recognize that it's not equality. There has to be an equity, right? There's going to be, everyone is going to vote, but some people's votes will count more than others in certain circumstances, or some people's votes will be specific to certain areas and others won't focus there or whatever, right? There has to be a complexity to it that takes into account the differentials of ability, skill, education, and whatnot. A lot of that difference is just predicated on genetics. For a long time, you're still going to be having to take into account the differentials that are just merely due to genetics.
We're nowhere near that.
Right. But they remind us of it because if we are going to go forward, if we are going to fall back into an interregnum, and we do continue to push forward and into the quest for knowledge and wisdom, right, that wisdom will begin, they're encouraging us to see that wisdom is going to be needed to set up an equity system instead of just this simple equality system, that we now have. That simple starting system, doesn't take you very far. Okay, number nine.
Nine, control of public servants. No civil government will be serviceable and effective unless the citizenry possess and use wise techniques of guiding and controlling office holders and public servants.
Okay, so this is becoming a huge problem, right? I mean, and notice how they're making sure that you don't just think of office holders. You're going, well, isn't this control all inherent, you know, in what we had in number 8 there, the fact that you're voting these people in and you can vote them out? No, because a bureaucracy begins to develop. And no one is voting these people in, and no one can vote them out. And in certain areas of that bureaucracy, they start to really fixate on that delightful little selfish element. And you now have, like, a huge problem, for instance, in the Justice Department and in the FBI, you know, under the Justice Department, where you got a lot of people there that have, not only do they believe, but they've promulgated this idea, and most people have bought into it, that they stand apart, that no one in Congress, you know, has any control over them. The president or anyone else in the executive branch has no control over them. Matter of fact, if they try to, that's some sort of huge problem that the president should be thrown out of office or something. No. No. Right. Like they're trying to point out here, that is way off the reservation wrong. Right? There can't be anyone in government who thinks that they are a government unto themselves, that they can't be fired. Right? This is a huge problem that we're, you know, signs are we're about to discover just how sweeping this has become, that we have a huge corruption of the government, to a degree which many can recognize that if that's allowed to continue, you can kiss representative government goodbye, right? You can't have any of these divisions of the executive branch thinking that somehow they're apart, that they don't serve at the pleasure, ultimately, of the people. That they can't, you know, that they don't have to respond to requests from Congress. That the president has to remain separate from them, lest he corrupt them or something. It's like, no. You know, that is so not the case. And it is startling how many people have bought into this belief, right? That the Justice Department is somehow above the president. And it's just not, that's not representative government. That's the rule by some sort of elite, you know, group of people, you know, that have appointed themselves, yeah. Right? As our, you know, those are foreign potentates. Yeah. Right? So huge problem. And just, you know, look, you know, so I mean, if you're looking for hopeful signs, look for those who don't just nod their head up and down when someone says, you know, that the Justice Department is some separate entity. It's like, no, it's not. It's like, well, it's subject to a single individual then. Yeah. it's like, well, that's scary. Well, representative government is scary. Democracy is scary. If you don't want scary, you know, then, you know, become a total serf and, you know, put yourself under submission to a king again. All right. And number 10.
10. Intelligent and trained representation. The survival of democracy is dependent on successful representative government, and that is conditioned upon the practice of electing to public offices only those individuals who are technically trained, intellectually competent, socially loyal, and morally fit. Only by such provisions can government of the people by the people, and for the people be preserved.
All right, it comes back to Abraham Lincoln. All right, one of the, you know, there's a reason why we chisel those words in marble, right, and build such a grand sculpture of him and put him in a grand palace, you know, building, right? Because, you know, that's a temple of democracy, right? It's holding up those truths. I see, and you notice I resisted the temptation to just say that over and over again as we're going through this list, because that's what so many things are about. It's ceasing to be government of the people, by the people, for the people. Right? And if the only government of the people, by the people, for the people perishes from the earth, then what of the earth? Right? There will be no freedom. You know, do you think the Russians and the Chinese are all about individual freedom and personal liberty? you know, and again here, you know, intelligent and trained representation. You know, remember what I was focusing on a little bit ago. The president is not your representative. The members of Congress are your representative. Are your representatives. And you're not electing a high priest to rule over us all, you know, as a singular representative. And so, you know, focus there first. Technically trained, intellectually competent, socially loyal, and morally fit. I mean, you got a lot of people in Congress that have no social loyalty. They don't believe in our system. They'd like to have a different system. What are they doing as our representatives? They're loyal to some other society. Right? They're more loyal to the citizens of another country than they are to the citizens of our country. That's not socially loyal. That's a problem. You know, you're getting ahead of yourself. We're a long ways away from, you know, some benign world government, you know, and this, you know, equal citizenry of the whole earth. You know, there's a tenuous little ember of the future, you know, barely glimmering in the darkness here, right? Like Lincoln knew. And if you snuff it out, right, wherewith shall it be salted? So, of the people, by the people, for the people. We've got to get back to making sure that we have the requisite internal integrity to be a citizen of a state, and then we need to see to it that all these things are built upon that foundation of our integrity.
The beauty of this is that all of this is for the evolution of the whole. But on the flip side of that, we're here, the purpose, sort of growing our character to become, to recognize, you know, the traits of loving God so that we can know God and grow our character. And all of this is dependent on
our individual character. Yes.
But also what it can, the harvest, the what it can manifest.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So and it's just really beautiful. Yes, it you can yeah. look at.
Yeah, and you can see there's so much more. You know, why should I have individual character? Is it because then I'll be resurrected? You know, is it about my salvation? Do I have to go through all this effort to develop this individual character so, you know, because of salvation? No. Your salvation is given to you by grace now.
Most people don't know that.
Yeah, most people don't know that. Right? But you know, the reason that you need that incredible character is because the world needs you. to have that incredible character. This country needs you. Right? As a citizen, you must have courageous and independent cosmic thinking. You must be a cosmic citizen. Right? And that cosmic citizen can then serve well as a citizen of a country. And especially a country like ours that's attempting to be this advancing state, territorial state, requires said citizen, as we're just reading. Right? I mean, if you want to save the world, see to it that you take delight in cultivating. Right? Right? Education of public opinion is the only safe and true method of accelerating civilization. Right? That starts, you know, with yourself. If the education system is broken down, then you need to educate yourself. Right? Did Abraham Lincoln only make it because he had a whole bunch of elite institutions he could go to? No. I mean, Descartes went through the elite institutions, got to the end of them, and recognized, well, they say I've been educated, but as I reflect on it, I think I've been filled with a bunch of garbage. And I think my first step is to erase everything and see if I can educate myself. Right? He was recognizing just, you know, how much ultimately you have to stand on your own two feet. Right? We're definitely there again. You know, what they fill your heads with now in a college is very unfortunate and needs to be erased, just like Descartes knew it needed to be erased. Back in the beginning of the 17th century, right? Before the Enlightenment. I see, before, right, at the beginning of the Enlightenment. Right? See, we're now in the deep Indian darkenment again. Right? You'll be filled with darkness again. Right? So you have to find the light on your own two feet now.
You can take the light.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think we can probably get a little ways into this, into section three here. This kind of just carries forward with this. You can see from the title, coming back a little bit, you know, again to those ideals as they mentioned up front in section two.
Section 3, the ideals of statehood. The political or administrative form of a government is of little consequence provided it affords the essentials of civil progress, liberty, security, education, and social coordination. It is not what a state is, but what it does that determines the course of social evolution. And after all, no state can transcend the moral values of its citizenry as exemplified in their chosen leaders. Ignorance and selfishness will ensure the downfall of even the highest type of government.
Okay, repeating a number of things that we've stressed. We don't need to re-stress them. Notice they gave you that interesting little set of four elements there. The essentials of civil progress. Liberty, security, education, and social coordination. So kind of an interesting way to sum up a lot of things we're talking about there. Right? There, the state has to acknowledge the reality and the validity of your free will liberty, spirit over mind. You can't say, no, we can't allow for anything like that. God knows what it'll come up with. As an absolute unique personality. No, it has to trust in that bringing that individuality, that absolute individuality down into play. It needs to see to it that there's security. Definitely needs to see to the education thing. Like we stressed, that's obviously the key foundational, one of the key foundational elements. And social coordination. Right? You're going to have all of these active individuals. And the state needs to just help with it, to establish a system so that those individuals can work together. Right? That coordination work means systematized association. Right? The individuals with their originality, their liberty-given originality, are going to come into association, and the government and the state needs to make sure there's a system, systemization to that association, so it can naturally grow together to reflect the cosmic wholeness above. As above, so below. Okay. Not going to micromanage. Just see to it that that they can come into this systematized association, and then just let what each individual generates as they pull down the cosmos into their minds flow out into the system. Trust the evolutionary process of that. All right. And there you see, you mentioned that told you it was coming up. The political or administrative form of government is of little consequence, provided, right, the four is these essentials. So you can have all kinds of different variations. That's fine. As long as it has the essentials. So in other words, as long as the philosophic framework is there, the common philosophic framework, the philosophic framework, the science of the government, the details can vary from group to group.
For instance?
Again, like I was saying, I mean, the whole point, we're supposed to be able to allow that from one state to another in the United States. And so maybe it's a unicameral legislature in this state, and it's a bicameral legislature in this state, and those, all those variations like that, we were trying to set it up so that we had all these different states, now 50, that would allow for all these different forms, but all under one common philosophic framework. All right, there are three branches of government. All right, that's common. Exactly, the details of each of those three branches can vary from state to state. But there's three branches.
We have a lot of variability in, we have city, county, state, federal governments, and they're constituted differently.
Yep.
There's a little problem right now in that in the coordination phase, in that there's confusion over what is the right. What should the federal government be doing, and what should the state government be doing?
Yeah.
They're struggling over trying to figure that out.
Right. And of course, again, like we pointed out, that tendency to drift, to having, basically all governments, lesser governments disappear, and there's just this one central government that, rules everything. Again, that's, you have this desire with your spiritual consciousness for a relationship to unity, but instead you want poor man's unity, you want uniformity. And it's like, well, the only way to get uniformity is to have a central authority that just forces everyone to wear the same clothing, right? There's different forms in the, in the vertical sense, like you're pointing out, right? The form is different in the vertical levels, and then it's different horizontally too. So there's all this diversity to meet the different specifics.
And it's not a dichotomy. Some things work better centralized and some things don't.
Right. Yeah.
Much as it is to be regretted, national egotism has been essential to social survival. The chosen people doctrine has been a prime factor in tribal welding and nation building right on down to modern times. But no state can attain ideal levels of functioning until every form of intolerance is mastered. It is everlastingly inimical to human progress. And intolerance is best combated by the coordination of science, commerce, play, and religion.
Okay, so again, you're putting this national egotism in an evolutionary context so that you... like we've pointed out, you know, when you're in clans, tribalism gets you out of clans. But then all good things taken to extreme become bad. And you need to let go of tribalism and replace it with nationalism, and et cetera. So, you know, they're pointing out that keeping it in an evolutionary sense, seeing when or how it has its place to get things going, you notice it's not just egoism, it's egotism, right? So it's going to, be net negative, before you go very far down the road, but still. Notice, I was pointing this out, this is one of these ironies, that the people that are the most fervent about progress, who most delight in that word, become steadily more and more intolerant because they see differences as delaying, right, the progress, like they said. And they get really frustrated and then just completely intolerant, if not militant against those differences, right? Completely clueless to the laws of all this, that's everlastingly inimical to human progress. So they become the agents of that which is most fundamentally corrosive to that which they desire the most.
Not even to the extent of saying that law is not true.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So again, it's this loss of this philosophic framework. So you just go off on these tangents.
That goes back to what we read earlier about the violent not allowing violent expression.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes a violent expression.
Sure, right. Because again, you're just, in the name of peace, you become, a terrorist. Yeah, the very antithesis of that which you initially set out to, to foster. Here you see the coordination thing. You have these different elements: science, commerce, play, religion. The state should be seeing to it that you have this systematized association, so that things can naturally interplay, mentioning play there. And, the state is ensuring that you don't get these eddy pools developing, right? It's keeping it all connected together, a coordinated phenomenon, so that people don't start isolating and pooling off and going off on tangents, where they can start to imagine that they live on a world that doesn't have all kinds of facts different than what's in their head.
Yeah,
right?
Dystopia.
Right.
So
okay.
I see a lot, I see science, commerce, and play picking up a lot, amongst my teenager, 20-year-olds. But I see religion going the other way.
Yeah.
There's no desire for religion. There's no, it's just like, it seems to be the whole, there's no quest for what's really going on. It's because, I don't know what it is, but it's getting kind of serious.
Yeah, and of course there you're pointing to a more fundamental problem. It's one thing if you don't have a state that's properly seeing to the existence of this systematized associative phenomenon, providing the framework, the coordinative framework. But if you don't have these elements, if you don't have science or religion, for instance, well, what's it? There's nothing to coordinate, right? And so there's even more fundamental problems in the lack of the coordination, right? When science corrupts itself, and when people cease to be interested in religion, right, you got a much more elemental problem.
Well, I must be lacking in imagination because I can kind of understand the commerce and to some degree the science, but I don't understand really how government can coordinate play. or religion.
Well, again,
that is by coordination of.
Or society.
I mean, again, it's just, you know, your government is making sure that the roadblocks don't develop, that that separate things, that, you know, that science, commerce, play, and religion don't get stovepiped. That's one way we talk about this in kind of common parlance, right? That, you know, to make sure that, you know, you don't get, like I said, you know, the various elements of your society, you know, isolating themselves into pools, right? That there's naturally an interplay amongst all things.
There's a lot of science and commerce in play. Look at sports.
Yeah, right. I mean, you could certainly, you know, think about. But then, of course, remember, all of this is also, you know, about intolerance, right? I mean, obviously, you see, if people just can't help because they just live in this system where you're constantly in this complex interassociation, right? I mean, it's so difficult to start hating someone. I mean, usually the simple remedy for when someone hates someone is because they've never talked to them. Yeah. It's easy to hate someone you never talked to, and then you actually talk to them, it's like, wow, they're like a human. Yeah, you suppose. You know, I mean, again, you can't allow people to pool like that because they'll all sink down by material gravity into the depths of their basal nature.
Oh, do it so quick.
You keep spiritual gravity working by keeping them bouncing off of each other. Keep them interacting. You can't allow for these little islands to develop. You got to prevent that.
Elements wouldn't become compounds unless they interacted.
Right. And again, it's one of the super additive consequences of the relationship between two persons is the evaporation of intolerance.
Yeah.
Right. It just naturally disappears.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to. It's not some complicated science to eradicating it. It happens naturally. As long as you are associating. Okay, give us a little list here.
The ideal state functions under the impulse of three mighty and coordinated drives. 1, love loyalty derived from the realization of human brotherhood. 2, intelligent patriotism based on wise ideals. 3, cosmic insight interpreted in terms of planetary facts, needs, and goals.
Okay, so it's a very succinct way to appreciate how a full human integrity mind, see, then plays out into the system. You know, you as an individual, you've gone all the way up to the sixth level of meaning. You've established a foundation in genuine love. And now loyalty is predicated on love. And you have that innate realization of human brotherhood, right? That's predicated on the innate, you know, love recognition, the personal realization of divine fellowship. Fatherhood implies brotherhood. You can see, you know, patriotism is important, right? Just because there's unintelligent, ignorant so-called patriotism doesn't mean there can't be, right, proper patriotism, and there must be. Right? Again, if there's not patriotism, then the state evaporates. Right? That whole about socially loyal. You know, if you put the people in another country before your country, I mean, how is your country going to endure? And it's just, you know, so trivially illogical. It doesn't mean you hate people in other countries. See, again, you've transcended that personal stuff. That's item number one, right? But you recognize that there are borders. And notice, see the cosmic intuitions, cosmic insight. Mm. Right? And then you're bringing that down, engaging facts, needs, goals. I mean, one simple way to kind of get the essence of all that is wisdom, insight, foresight. You need to have those qualities to ever greater degrees. For your state to be advancing. All right. notice, though, I mean, we're in the ideals of statehood, and they keep saying the ideal state functions. So, don't think that you can magically snap your fingers and establish these things. But this is what everyone should know is the common destiny, common goal. Everyone is striving towards these ends. Yep.
So the second one, based on wise ideals. What's wise about an ideal? ideals aren't wise. What's necessary is to apply wisdom to the ideals, to temper them.
To bring the ideal down into the sphere of wisdom. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, so all these things, just, I hope you've spent some time reflecting on, they spent a lot of time, the revelators, selecting their words carefully, right, to be as ripe with reflective potential as possible. Don't just listen to me jiggle air molecules about this stuff. Spend some time on your own reflecting on this. Okay?
The laws of the ideal state are few in number, and they have passed out of the negativistic taboo age into the era of the positive progress of individual liberty consequent upon enhanced self-control. The exalted state not only compels its citizens to work, but also entices them into profitable and uplifting utilization of the increasing leisure which results from toil liberation by the advancing machine age. Leisure must produce as well as consume.
Okay, quite a bit there. now remember, we were pondering this kind of imponderable thing of what does that look like when you move out of the negativistic taboo, mode of laws? Don't do this, don't do that. And you're going, well, what would the laws be? Well, what did they just say there, right? Are there lots and lots and lots of these positive laws? No, they're few in number. Because the laws are not written without, they're written within. The more you go forward, the more you don't need external laws. Right? You recognize your personal responsibility and you exercise self-control. Right? External laws are replaced by self-mastery in an advancing civilization.
Right, but a lot of people are looking at that now, Like, I'll give you another example. My 23-year-old son, who was like getting all these traffic tickets, he says, screw the state, I'm not going to pay my tickets, I can tell whether I should park and not park. I don't need anybody telling me what to do.
Yeah.
And why do we need laws anyway? And people, I'm just telling you, there's a lot of people.
Sure.
They're younger. That's their attitude right now.
Yeah.
They're all for socialism.
Right. And if we go back to fear and hunger, clearing our heads of these foolish notions, we'll have to slowly over time rediscover, that's why we needed laws, and that's why I should submit myself to laws. Remember, they tried to point out, it took forever for mankind to figure that out. We finally figured it out, and then we stopped teaching it, and immediately the next generation is going, laws, what do I need laws for? We got to start all over again. Right? figuring out just how bad it is when you have anarchy. Yeah. You think laws are constraining. Wait till you try anarchy.
Especially at this stage.
Yeah.
Say maybe in an advanced stage, people have the intelligence and the experience and, you know, and everything else, mm-hmm. as you say, where the laws come from within.
See, it shouldn't take a lot of reflection for someone to just, it's like, now which would be more limiting to my freedom, laws or anarchy?
And then the next question is, well, what is anarchy?
Yeah. No laws.
So that's
anarchy is right. It's right. All those philosophic terms have to be understood.
What are they teaching in high schools?
But it's like one, two, and many. One, two, and the next syllable is many.
It's like the old days when they could only count to three and have three legs in the stool.
Yeah. So again, you know, you see, you move to that positive mode where the state is just trying to, through the laws, to foster this system of associations. Do this, engage this way, engage that way, right? Instead of all this, now don't do that because that disrupts our society. And don't, well, I want to do that. Well, no, don't do that. See, we won't be in that selfish mode, right? And it will be just trying to foster the system. Right, the coordination. Like I said, individual liberty consequent upon enhanced self-control. Now, notice they're starting to bring in some of these issues. The exalted state not only compels its citizens to work. Does that sound like an exalted state to a lot of us? No. Compulsory labor.
It's compulsory.
And it also entices them into profitable and uplifting utilization. Right? That whole bit, leisure must produce as well as consume. See, it's a must sentence. And so you're going, oh, well, how many people think that way? And we just think that leisure consumes, right? Time, money, whatnot. Well, obviously, if it says must, if we're not doing that, it's going to lead to a collapse in some way.
Yeah, and it will be produced by volunteering. You know, being this different, you don't have to produce necessarily economically.
Right. But produce in some way, right, you must. And so, I mean, eventually, you know, you don't want to be too hard on yourself. I mean, it's rough in the, you know, trying to, you know, get some of the benefits of the material comfort era. You know, we deserve a little bit of leisure, but we have to think about evolving that forward, right, into that domain of self-control, where everything you're doing is has a purpose to it. There isn't anything frivolous. Does the Universal Father do something frivolous? No, everything is infinitely purposed. Right? And if you want to be godlike, everything you do has to be purposed, including your leisure time. Okay, well...
you don't want to tackle this one.
I was trying to decide if I wanted to throw in just one more little thing. I think I will. Let's just read this one other little paragraph.
Lest we stumble into leisure that's unproductive.
We don't want to belabor this, but let's hit on it and we'll end there.
No society has progressed very far when it permits idleness or tolerates poverty. But poverty and dependence can never be eliminated if the defective and degenerate stocks are freely supported and permitted to reproduce without restraint.
It seems like a very negative thing for me to end on, but I want to end on a reminder that when you're talking about the ideals of statehood, and you're talking about ideals, we can't forget how benighted we are genetically. Okay. That's one of the very practical things that we can't lose sight of. Like, for instance, you know, our wonderful ideas of eliminating poverty. See, but poverty and dependence can never be eliminated until you got the fruits of genetic engineering, artificial biologic uplift. It's a genetic thing. Poverty doesn't fundamentally result from inadequate, you know, redistribution mechanisms or something. It's genetic. All right, that's one of the key things the Revelators bring out in so many ways. The things that our idealism finds fault with, and we try to dream up schemes to fix these issues that aren't idealistic, we don't recognize just about 100% of all those things are predicated on genetics.
They're beginning to learn that.
Yeah. But it's so politically incorrect, we know. But
it's beginning to see
yes,
more and more
it's going to be inescapable. Science is going to continue forward in this regard. We're going to have to face that fact again, despite the Nazis and everything, right? And how wrapped around the axle we've gotten.
Because that's the only way we're going to make up for Adam and Eve.
Right.
Eventually.
And another reason I wanted to just bring this out. Notice they say defective and degenerate.
Yeah.
I mean, the degenerate is basically the vertical dimension, and they're contrasting defective with degenerate, so that you think both horizontally and vertically we've got issues. We're Swiss cheese, right? Horizontally, and we are debased. We are lowered vertically in many ways. So we've got a huge problem, vertically and horizontally, to deal with this genetics. I mean, step one, obviously, is some upliftment, getting the genetics up a little off of its basal foundations. And then we have to work on the horizontal elements. And these are long-term projects. You're working on this way into light and life because it's relative. There's really coarse holes in the Swiss cheese, right? And there's very little fine holes in the Swiss cheese. To challenge, we all need to challenge our idealism about this. An awful lot of the issues that we struggle with, they don't have some sort of legislative or executive or philanthropic or whatever answer. Right? It's genetic. Right? We have to develop the science to get the roadblocks out of the way in our genetics and the boat anchors out of ourselves that are dragging us down and disrupting the wholeness horizontally of our minds. So, you can see a common theme, and again, why I wanted to end there. Several times as we've gone through this, you've noticed that they're trying to juxtapose to get you to think about both the spiritual idealism and the material pragmatism, to get you to think about the two together so that you can have a cosmic perspective about these things. Sometimes it's a gentle little issue. Sometimes it's really harsh, using strong words like degenerate and defective. Okay. But it's all basically the same thing. We have to open both eyes, face facts, and adjust them to ideals in order to achieve wisdom. And let's wrap it up there, and we'll finish up this section and continue on next time. Let's take a moment, everyone.